the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Our next guest is with us because of the publication of Sean Lamass, The Lost Memoir. Sean Lamass is how many years dead now, Ronan McGreevy?
He died in 1971, 55 years dead.
Okay. And where did you come across this lost memoir which you've edited?
Well, between 1967 and 1969, Sean Lamass recorded 23 interviews with a man by the name of Dermot Ryan, who was a businessman. He was a friend of his and he's also a member of the Fianna Fáil National Executive. So these recordings, they amount to 22 hours of tapes and 270,000 words were supposed to be Sean Lamass's, basically his authorised biography, which Dermot Ryan said he was going to write with the approval of Sean Lamass. But Lamass died in 1971, didn't get published, and then Dermot Ryan had financial difficulties, which mean he had to immigrate to England. So to cut a long story short, basically, it never got done, but Dermot Ryan handed over the transcripts and the recordings to the Lamass family in 2018. They approached me about it. We published a supplement in May 2018, and then I decided
This is in the Irish Times.
I apologise. Yeah.
I should have said that.
Yeah, in the Irish Times. And then I decided that I would return to it at a later stage. So now I've produced it in book form.
Okay. Mountain of work in that. So what did you try to achieve? Because you couldn't put all 230,000 words.
270,000
words unedited into a book. What did you try to do with it?
Well, I tried to. So first of all, the memoir dates from 1923 on, from his time in politics to 1966 when he finished up in politics. I have a new chapter though on his earlier life because there's a lot of new information has come out.
Because he was involved in the 1916 rising and the Civil War, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, the new information, it's new in book form. It has been out there before. That none of his previous biographers knew that he killed his own brother in 1916, January 1916, shot him dead by accident in his home in Capel Street. And then
what age was he when he did that?
16.
What age was his brother?
18 months.
How? What happened?
It appears that all we have is the details of the inquest, which were published in a number of the newspapers at the time, that he was playing on the chair and Herbert Lamass, who was his brother, was with their sister Claire Lamass, and he just shot him dead by accident. And the inquest said at the end of it all that young people shouldn't have guns. I mean, but I suppose the interesting thing about it is this was completely wiped from the public conscience for nearly 100 years and probably would still not be known to the public, but for the fact that Professor Eunan O'Halpin at TCD came across it when he was looking for something else. Extraordinary story.
So it is extraordinary because it raises all sorts of questions. How did he cope with that afterwards? What, you know, did he talk to Dermot Ryan about this at all?
Not at all.
No mention of it.
No, he didn't speak about the past. He didn't speak about the revolutionary period at all with Dermot Ryan, except in passing. This was in keeping with his whole attitude to the whole thing. He really didn't like talking about that period at all. In fact, he gave an interview to Michael Mills, the Irish press journalist, in 1969 when he was asked, like, you know, what did you do in the War of Independence? He says, I don't want to talk about it because a lot of people got killed. And in fact,
I think he probably killed people.
Well, he did kill somebody. Spoiler alert. I mean, I think I have came across in his pension file that he shot dead Geoffrey Bagley, who was a British Army agent on Bloody Sunday, 1920. This had been rumoured for years, but actually I have it from the horse's mouth because it's in his pension application.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what sort of things then did he write about or give interviews that you then have decided to use in the memoir?
So he speaks about his time in politics from 1323 to 66. So you're looking at, you know, he was a government minister for 22 years. He was Taoiseach for 7. He talks about how he accidentally ended up in politics because of another family tragedy, which was the fact that his brother Noel had been murdered in 1923. As a result of that, Sinn Féin decided to put him on a ballot in a by-election without telling him. He lost that by-election, but he won every election after that. So it begins there. He talks about the split in Sinn Féin in 1926, which leads to the foundation of Fianna Fáil and Fianna Fáil's centenary this year, basically over this the issue of the oath of allegiance to the king. Lamass was dead against them staying out because of that, and they thought that if they could get rid of the oath of allegiance, they should go into Dáil Éireann and make a fist of it. And then, of course, he talks about coming into government in 1932 for the first time, and how he felt that there could have been a coup around that period by Cumann na Gael, army officers loyal to Cumann na Gael, but you know, Fianna Fáil did enter politics in 32. And then he talks about, I suppose, one of the many interesting revelations in the book is his attitude to De Valera. He thought De Valera was basically a political genius between 26 and 48. You know, you'd served Taoiseach for 16 years, but he said that nobody but De Valera would have been able to turn the defeated anti-treaty side into a government in the space of 10 years.
A lot of people felt that Lamass came to be the Taoiseach too late in his career and he only got 7 years. But could it have been that he actually did the state a lot of service by not becoming Taoiseach, by being Minister for Finance in particular and working with Ken Whittaker for modernising the Irish economy and what they did in the 1950s, even if the real benefits didn't come until we joined the European Union or the EEC as it was in 1973, it was what Lamass and Whittaker did from the late 1950s that set the foundations for the transformation of the state.
Yes, well, really, Lamass didn't take over as Taoiseach until 1959, but in effect, from 1957, and he says this in the book, he was in charge of economic policy. And actually, when we were talking about there, the first programme for economic expansion, the famous one with T.K. Whittaker and James Ryan and Lamass, he said the De Valera had nothing to do with this. So this was all Lamass pushing this forward. And what Lamass says in the book really is that the psychological impact of the first economic plan was as important as this practical impact. The very fact that the country had a plan, an overarching economic plan for the first time, which I found hard to believe, but it's true. The state never had done economic planning on a holistic basis before that. It was itself a driver of growth. So that first economic plan, they bargained for 2% growth, and once they got 4, it had a multiplier effect. So the economy kind of took off in the 60s after that.
And what about Ireland's place in the world? Because he would have been, wasn't he, the first Taoiseach to send troops on a peacekeeping mission for the United Nations. Yeah. And he didn't believe in military neutrality as such. He believed in political neutrality, which is very much the line, isn't it, that Taoiseach Micheál Martin uses at present.
Yeah, he says that we're militarily non-aligned, but we're not neutral. And what he meant by that was, in any conflict between the West and the East, as it was then during the Cold War, but in any conflict between democracies and totalitarian states, Ireland will be on the side of democracy. Lamass's tenure as Taoiseach had very significant impact on Ireland's foreign relations for two reasons. One was you talked about there about us sending peacekeeping troops to the Lebanon or to the Congo in 1960. The other and most important thing he did was that he began the drive to get Ireland membership of the EEC in 1961. And he says in the book that De Valera, he and De Valera basically disagree completely about the importance of small countries being involved in multilateral institutions like the EEC or the UN or whatever. He believed that it would actually increase Ireland's influence in the world to be in the EEC. De Valera thought otherwise, thought it would diminish Ireland's influence and we'd be at the behest of larger countries. But anyway, Lamass began the process in 1961 of driving, trying to get Ireland ready for EEC membership. The reason he didn't succeed wasn't to do with him, was due to the fact that de Gaulle had blocked Britain's entry into Europe. And essentially, because our two economies were so aligned at that stage, you know, it was a two-for-one deal. So if Britain went in, we went in. If not, if they stayed out, we had to stay out.
What about his position on a united Ireland? How much does he get into that? Or did he get into that in the interviews you were able to then use?
Yeah, he gets into it in great detail. Essentially, another thing he's really famous for is he went north in 1965 at the request of the Northern Premier, Terence O'Neill. And this was the first time that a Taoiseach had met the Northern Premier for 40 years. And Lamass talks in the book about the issue of partition being not one that the British can resolve. The British can't just wave a magic wand and say bye-bye to the North. That it had to be with the consent of the unionist majority, which is a generally accepted proposition nowadays, but it really wasn't accepted that much by nationalists back in the 60s. De Valera essentially felt that if he could put enough international pressure on the British themselves, the British government, that they would simply leave. Lamass thought otherwise. Lamass thought that you had to build relations from the ground up and trust from the ground up and start with the things you had in common. A little bit like Micheál Martin's Shared Island project now.
Famously, of course, he had a son-in-law who became Taoiseach afterwards, Charles Haughey. Did Haughey get many mentions in the interviews?
He does, yeah. Well, he tells a famous story. I think it's been recounted before, whereby the cabinet who had responsibility for junior ministerial roles in the 1960s recommended Charles Haughey for a junior ministerial role in justice. And Sean Lamass wanted Sean Flanagan. The reason being that he didn't want to be seen to be favouring Charles Haughey, but the cabinet overruled him and said that Charles Haughey, his own son-in-law, was a much better candidate. And of course, Lamass famously told him, as Taoiseach, I think you should accept this position as your son-in-law or your father-in-law. I think you'd be daft to take it. He felt basically at that time that Charles Haughey had so many business interests on the go that it would be to his financial detriment if he was to take the position as junior minister. But he said in the book basically that Haughey, once he got into junior ministerial role, he proved that he had the ability to be a minister. Of course, he became Minister for Justice after that.
And does he talk much, or did he talk much? You know the way 21st century politicians have to reveal so much about themselves.
Yeah.
And in fact, you could say late 20th century Taoiseach did as well. Did you get much about the personal life? For example, I've always heard rumours that he was a big gambler. Does that come across?
Yeah, he says in the book that he did gamble, but it was only on a small scale basis. There's a chapter in the book about his personal life. He talks about being the type of person who always likes everything in the right place at the right time. He likes to go to the same hotels every year. He hated fuss. He hated all these sort of jobs you have to do as government minister, like white tie dinners and stuff like that. I have seen no evidence either from this book or from any other evidence that he was a significant gambler. I'm not saying he wasn't, but I don't believe that he was. I do mention at the very end of the book that when he died in 1971, his estate was worth about £55,000, which includes most of that obviously bound up in the value of his house that he had bought from his own parents. And that estate is worth about €850,000 in today's money. So, I mean, for a man who enriched this country in so many ways, he did not die a rich man.
Fascinating stuff. Sean Lamass, The Lost Memoir. Congratulations, Rona McGreevy, on the work and on the book.
Thank you so much, Matt.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.